Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Janet Jalil. Welcome to a special breaking news edition of the Global News Podcast recorded at 20:30 GMT on Friday, the 22nd of March. Catherine, the Princess of Wales, is undergoing treatment for cancer. She revealed the diagnosis in a video statement.
It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay.
We look at what this means for the princess and the royal family after weeks of speculation about her health. Also, at least 40 people have been killed in a gun attack at a concert hall near Moscow. Explosions have also been heard. Israel tells America's top diplomat on his latest visit to Tel Aviv that it will go ahead with its planned offensive in the crowded Gazan city of Rafah with or without US support. The Princess of Wales has revealed that she's being treated for cancer. Catherine stepped back from royal duties when she had abdominal surgery in January. After weeks of speculation on social media about the princess's health, she released a video. In it, she said she had initially thought her condition was non-cancerous, but subsequent tests had found that cancer was present. She said it had been an incredibly tough couple of months for her and her family, and that she was undergoing chemotherapy and getting stronger every day. Let's play you that video statement in full.
I wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you personally for all the wonderful messages of support and for your understanding whilst I've been recovering from surgery. It has been an incredibly tough couple of months for our entire family, but I've had a fantastic medical team who have taken great care of me, for which I'm so grateful. In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family. As you can imagine, this has taken time. It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay. As I've said to them, I am well and getting stronger every day by focusing on the things that will help me heal in my mind, body and spirits. Having William by my side is a great source of comfort and reassurance too, as is the love, support and kindness that has been shown by so many of you. It means so much to us both. We hope that you'll understand that as a family, we now need some time, space and privacy while I complete my treatment. My work has always brought me a deep sense of joy and I look forward to being back when I'm able. But for now, I must focus on making a full recovery. At this time, I'm also thinking of all those whose lives have been affected by cancer. For everyone facing this disease, in whatever form, please do not lose faith or hope. You are not alone.
Our British Affairs correspondent, Rob Watson, said it was a stunning development.
A shock to her, clearly a shock to the family, and a shock to the nation. I have to pause for a second, Jeanette, and say it's pretty extraordinary. I mean, I can't remember a senior member of the royal family in the sort of 40-odd years I've been working for the BBC feeling the need to make a statement like this. And clearly Kate and the royal family have felt, right, we couldn't have all this sort of rumour mongering going on any longer. So I picked that out. But obviously I pick out from her statement, I mean, one is the acknowledgement that whatever surgery she had in January was major. I mean, that was pretty striking. Second, of course, was her talking of preventative chemotherapy, the implication being that whatever surgery was done, the chemotherapy is a precaution and is road to recovery and sort of safety first. And then the third thing that I picked out, of course, was that line about her saying that she's going to be okay. And then the fact she was getting stronger. I thought also, interestingly, the way she referred to William being by her side. And I think that is perhaps intended to scotch some of those other rumours that have been out there, not just about her health, but about her relationship. And then, of course, there was the appeal for privacy and space and time. And just that's an extraordinary moment, really. I don't know whether this will calm down any of the speculation. I'm pretty sure that it would be a safe bet, Jeanette, to say that the British tabloid newspapers, one imagines, will start to rally behind the royal family and certainly behind her Princess Kate in the light of the statement, which I think is going to soften many hearts.
Absolutely, because she has had to contend not only with her health issues, but this frenzy of interest on social media with these outlandish conspiracy theories being touted. And now perhaps a lot of people will be feeling a little bit ashamed of themselves, because this is a woman, a young woman with three young children, as you said, who is simply asking for time, space and privacy to deal with a very serious illness.
It's interesting that you raised that, Jeanette. I was wondering whether to say that in the last answer, whether maybe some of the people who've been speculating in overtime and overdrive on social media will think, and maybe I went too far. What sort of analysts of the royal family and the way modern public relations work have said is that, look, inevitably, when there is, in this kind of age that we live in, Jeanette, an information gap, I mean, people will fill it, right? And you could say it's naive, it's unfortunate, it's not a great world we live in, but that is the reality, and that's the reality the royal family has come up against.
Rob Watson. Despite the appeals for privacy, there is intense interest in the princess's health. Our health correspondent, Catherine Burns, told us what we do and what we don't know.
So we know that she had major abdominal surgery in January. We know that at the time it was thought her condition was not cancerous and that the surgery was a success. But tests after the operation found that cancer had been present, which the princess describes as a huge shock. We also know that her medical team want her to have a course of what she's calling preventative chemotherapy, and she started that at the end of February. She's said to be in good spirits, and that does come across in her video to a certain extent. I was really struck by the fact that she said, "I am going to be okay. I am well and getting stronger every day. I must focus on making a full recovery." And they've said why this has come out now. They said, you know, first of all, she had major surgery to recover from. Then she had to get her head around this new diagnosis and be there for her children as they did the same. Now she feels ready as her children are starting their Easter holidays to put this news out in the world and also to have her children at home for the next few weeks where she can look after them. But there is a lot that we don't know. We don't know what that initial operation was for. We don't know what kind of cancer it is or what stage it was at. And we won't be told that. And we won't be speculating about it either, because she does have this right to medical privacy. But what we do know is some overall facts about cancer. So in the UK, she is now one of 3 million people living with cancer. Someone is diagnosed with it every 90 seconds. That's more than 1,000 people a day in the UK. We also know that most of those cases are for older people. About a third of them are for people who are over 75. So her age, her relatively young age, will hopefully be a positive factor in her recovery.
Catherine Burns. Well, the news about Catherine, Princess of Wales, comes weeks after it was revealed that King Charles has also been diagnosed with cancer. Members of the royal family carry out about 2,000 engagements every year. Our home editor, Mark Easton, considers what it will mean not having the Princess of Wales to call on.
Catherine's illness and her absence from the front line of royal duties is a huge blow for the royal family, already struggling to keep the show on the road with the King's cancer treatment restricting his availability, and also the absence of the Sussexes, Harry and Meghan, as well as, for very different reasons, Prince Andrew. The slimmed-down royal family now looks dangerously stretched. Prince William will return to public duties when his children go back to school in the middle of April, but he will, of course, want to spend considerable time with his wife and to be around for George, Charlotte and Louis. Queen Camilla has repeatedly stepped in for her husband since King Charles' cancer diagnosis, but at 76 the palace will not want to increase her workload too much more. Other working royals are already at close to full throttle, and it seems inevitable that there will be significant pruning of planned royal visits and appointments. Kate, as the world knows her, has been the model of wholesome, healthy normality, acting as a vital dose of ordinariness in the House of Windsor. But the Princess of Wales is also a global superstar, repeatedly voted one of the most influential women in the world. In Britain, she is the most popular of all the royals. The Kate effect is such that the dresses she wears will sell out within hours of the photos hitting Instagram. The UK monarchy will be weaker without Catherine around, and the institution's already reeling from a king who's unwell and a family riven by scandal and quarrel. They will miss her.
Mark Easton. And now to our other breaking news story. At least 40 people have been killed after an attack on a concert hall near Moscow. That was the sound of hundreds of people trying to escape the Crocus concert hall in Krasnogorsk after camouflaged gunmen entered the building and started firing. This man was among those in the concert hall at the time.
I was sitting in the hall upstairs where the balconies were. We heard gunshots. At first, we didn't understand what was happening. Then I personally saw how the terrorists came in, started shooting everyone. In the end, they threw a petrol bomb. Everything was set on fire. We were led to the exit. It turned out the exit was locked. We ran all over the Crocus City trying to find an exit, but to no avail. We went into the basement of the Crocus City Hall and waited for the emergency services and got out.
We got more on this developing story from our Russia editor, Steve Rosenberg.
This is what we know so far, that this evening a number of armed men stormed into the Crocus City Hall, which is quite a famous concert hall on the edge of Moscow. How many attackers? Between 2 and 5, reports say. We don't know the actual figure. And they started shooting. 70 ambulances were called to the scene. Explosions have been heard from inside the building. The Crocus City Hall is reported to be on fire with still people inside. Russian special forces have been called to the scene. And a few minutes ago, there were reports that they have started to storm the building. So the assumption is that there are still attackers inside. But also, Moscow police say they are hunting for a gunman who may have escaped from the scene. So, a very confused picture at the moment. Security has been stepped up at airports and train stations across Moscow. Also, all sporting events, cultural events have been cancelled in the Russian capital because of this. The Moscow mayor has called these events a terrible tragedy, and the Russian foreign ministry has called it a bloody terrorist attack.
And the timing of this is interesting, isn't it? Because it comes days after elections were held in Russia, which Mr. Putin won by a landslide, which was denounced by many as a sham because no viable candidates were really standing against him. And it also comes as Russia has just launched one of its biggest attacks on Ukraine since its war in Ukraine started.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful at this point in linking this to anything. We don't know who these gunmen are. All we know is that they were in camouflage and they were gunmen and they started shooting. We don't know who they are. So I think for the moment, because the very uncertain situation going on there, we shouldn't speculate about links to the elections, links to what's happening in Ukraine. I think more information will come out during the night and into the morning.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. Still to come on the Global News podcast, we find out about Germany's new regulations on cannabis.
People will be able to grow their own, and limited amounts of cannabis will also be available in state-regulated members' clubs.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaur.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome back to the Global News Podcast. There are further signs of a growing rift between Israel and its most important ally, the United States, over the war in Gaza. The American Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, held talks in Tel Aviv on Friday, urging the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, not to mount a major military operation in Gaza's southernmost city, Rafah. It's become a giant refugee camp, sheltering more than a million displaced Palestinians. But Mr. Netanyahu says his country will go ahead with the planned ground assault on Rafah, with or without US backing. Our State Department correspondent Tom Bateman is travelling with Mr. Blinken.
On the tarmac in Tel Aviv, the welcome flags were out for Antony Blinken. But like the hulking grey military plane he arrived in, the day was without much of the usual fuss or niceties. At the Ministry of Defence, he sat with the Israeli War Cabinet before talks with Benjamin Netanyahu. The US-Israel relationship is under severe stress as Washington, which is Israel's biggest military backer, has been unable to ensure enough humanitarian aid is getting into Gaza. A UN-backed food security assessment has said a man-made famine in Gaza is imminent. After his meetings, Mr. Blinken spoke to those of us in the press travelling with him.
100% of the population of Gaza is acutely food insecure. 100% is in need of humanitarian assistance. Now, there have been some positive steps taken in recent days to improve the situation, but it's not enough. And we talked about what needs to happen to get much more assistance to many more people more effectively.
The Americans also oppose an Israeli ground assault into the city of Rafah. But Mr. Netanyahu, like members of his ultra-nationalist coalition, has publicly pushed back at the US, further straining relations. Speaking after his discussions with the US Secretary of State, Mr. Netanyahu said Israel would act to protect its citizens.
I told Mr. Blinken that we have no way to defeat Hamas without entering Rafah and eliminating the rest of the battalions there. And I told him that I hope we'll do it with the support of the United States. But if we have to, we'll do it alone.
While he was in Tel Aviv in his motorcade, Mr. Blinken left his armoured vehicle and greeted a small group of protesters calling for a hostage release deal. "We're working to bring them home," Mr. Blinken said as he walked down a line of people behind a barricade who chanted, "Thank you, Blinken, and we trust you." In a move probably timed to embarrass Mr. Blinken, Israel's far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich announced that Israel was seizing a further swathe of land in the occupied West Bank, which activists called the largest action of its kind in decades.
Tom Bateman. The war in Gaza was sparked by the Hamas attacks in October, in which more than 1,000 Israelis were killed. Since then, the children of Gaza have paid a terrible price. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says more than 13,000 children have been killed by Israeli forces and thousands more left orphans. One of them is 12-year-old Alma, who's now sheltering in Rafah. She was the only member of her family to survive a blast in Gaza City. Our senior international correspondent, Orla Guerin, reports on Alma's story.
Well, Alma is a 12-year-old girl who was living with her family in an area of downtown Gaza City. After the war began, she told us they moved several times. Her parents were desperately trying to keep the family safe, but she said in each location they went to, the first, the second, and then the third, there was bombing in the area. And on the third occasion, the bomb actually landed on the five-story building in which Alma was sheltering, not just with her family, but she says with about 140 other refugees. Now, she is a remarkably strong, bright, intelligent girl, and we had wanted to tell the story of an orphan in Gaza, but we wanted to find a child who was well enough, who was old enough, and who was ready to tell that story. And we were put in touch with Alma. Of course, we got permission from her aunt and uncle, who are taking care of her now, as she's now living with them and their children in a tent in Rafah. But Alma was able to give us a very detailed account of the events of the night and morning in which she was trapped underneath the rubble. And that was the morning of December 2nd. And we were able to obtain the rescue video that lets us hear exactly what happened when rescuers heard her voice calling out.
Alma was scared.
A shout from under the rubble. I'm Alma. Can you see my light? Asks Mahmoud, the rescue worker. I swear I'll get to you. Alma asks for her sister and brothers. Bravo, Alma, he says, as she emerges after 3 hours buried alive. Where are your brothers and sister? He asks. They're over here, she says, and my mum is over there.
I am 12 years old and the only survivor of my family. The first place we fled to was bombed, and the second. And in the third place, the bomb hit us. They were all killed. We were happy together as a family, though we were scared. We used to hug each other tightly, out of fear. I hoped my brother Tarazan would still be alive. I was calling out to him. I found him in an unimaginable state, his head severed.
What a memory for a child to carry.
I wish for death after seeing my brother like that. He was only 18 months old. What has he done in this war?
Now, it's very hard to try and put figures on all of this, but we did get one estimate from a respected independent Palestinian human rights group that has field workers on the ground in Gaza. And they told us that according to their most recent estimate, which was at the end of February, there are about 20,000 children who have been orphaned by the war in Gaza. But they also emphasized that the real figure could be much higher because of the difficulty and the danger of trying to gather information in Gaza.
Ola Guerin. The upper house of the German federal parliament has removed the final hurdle which stood in the way of the partial legalization of cannabis. The law, which comes into effect on April the 1st, will allow people to consume the drug, but specifies that smoking it in public spaces in Germany should be banned. Damian McGuinness reports from Berlin.
From April 1st, adults in Germany will be allowed to possess up to 25 grams of cannabis for personal use. That's enough for dozens of joints. But sales of the drug will be strictly controlled. People will either be able to grow their own, three plants will be allowed for personal use, and limited amounts of cannabis will also be available in state-regulated members' clubs. For decades, politicians in Germany have been arguing over whether to legalise cannabis. Opposition conservatives believe this will simply fuel drug abuse. But the left-wing-led government says that controlled legalisation will undermine the black market and make products safer. What most people in Germany can agree on is that the strategy so far hasn't worked, with soaring drug use among young people and a booming black market.
Damian McGuinness. And finally, she's a grandmother and a video gaming sensation. 75-year-old Kath Bowie from Scotland became interested in video game Fortnite after seeing her grandson play it. She now spends up to 6 hours on it and has thousands of followers. This report from Catriona Renton.
This is the oldest Fortnite player in the world, Grumpy Gran 1948.
Kath Bowie was introduced to the online video game by her grandson Lewis.
But one day, I just walked into his bedroom and it was the very first week that Fortnite came out. And I saw the screen and I can't explain why. It was just instant love.
Kath suggested to Lewis that she might have a go at streaming.
And he was just a typical 18-year-old. You can't do that. You can't stream. Nobody will watch you. You'll never have any followers, right? So, of course, now he's eating his words.
It's very, very nice to meet you.
Kath teamed up with American YouTuber Cypher PK.
Here we go, here we go.
The pair got on famously.
Are you lost? Oh my, I kind of see them, but oh, that's another thing. PK, I forgot to tell you, I've got bad eyesight.
And made a great team.
He seemingly loved it. He just had a good time as well.
Let's go!
And they won.
First game, first win.
Jeez.
All right.
And Grumpy Gran 1948 had a victory song.
Well, you can't shove your granny off a bus.
Yeehaw. I would never.
You can't shove your granny off a bus.
That was Grumpy Gran, 1948, otherwise known as Kath Bowie, ending that report by Catriona Renton. And that's all from us for now, but there will be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. This edition was mixed by Dan Ehrlich. The producers were Sean Wales and Anna Murphy. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Jeanette Jaleel. Until next time, goodbye.